across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlove.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. It is 6:06 on this Friday the 13th. Friday morning, September 13th, 2024, 53 days till Election Day. And it's another beautiful day to have you here up north, live from Lake Wissota, from wherever you're listening across the Civic Media Radio Network, the Civic Media app, on demand by podcast or through social media. Thanks for starting your day here. Normally, my question is for you. Instead, my I got a question for you, Greg. Did you know the crowd at Tim Walz's rally last night is no longer chanting, "We're not going back, we're not going back"? Can you, I just sent you a link. Can you turn the volume up nice and loud and tell us what the crowd is chanting at Tim Walz' rally last night in Michigan?
Will do.
We're not eating cats. We're not eating cats.
Oh, Michigan, we love you.
Oh, my goodness. What a time to be alive, huh? We're not eating cats.
I mean,
if you can't have fun this year, finally, with a presidential campaign that everybody thought was going to be the least fun thing ever. I mean, God bless these folks. I mean, first off, Trump is the gift that keeps on giving in that he's now just like, I'm not weird. And yesterday he wasn't just talking about eating cats and dogs, but like geese disappearing from city parks and things like that. And, you know, the crowd, instead of getting all riled up about it, is just like, fine, we'll chant it. We're not eating cats. I'm starting to like covering politics again. How are you today on this nice little Friday morning?
You know, I'm good. I mentioned to you before we got on the air that the governor of Ohio has actually gone into Springfield with some aid for the community. And now they're saying they're sending troops into Springfield. No, they're just trying to help.
Actually trying to be helpful. Yeah. Right. So
all out of a nothing story, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah. So Tim Walz was in Grand Rapids last night for a rally. He's still there this morning. He's coming to Mosinee, to the Wausau area around 3 o'clock for an event in Wausau around 3:45 or so. And then off to Superior, land at the airport in Duluth. And he has an event in Superior about 2:30 tomorrow afternoon. So the campaign, the Harris-Walz campaign, is sticking to its promise to be in every media market in every battleground state this week, coming out of the debate. So there's still no lack of things for us to do, and it's just so much better than how I thought it was going to be a couple of months back. Like, all right, Joe Biden is here, Donald Trump is there. And again, this is the take nothing away from Joe Biden. I'm just saying it's the dimensions of this race are so different now.
Well, there's this energy now. We love Joe. We love Joe. Yeah. But there also felt a bit of, I don't want to say manufactured energy, but it felt like people were trying really hard to be excited. And now it's not the case. Now we're excited. I mean, he's going to take Mosinee and turn it into Mosin-wee.
It's possible, yes.
And I don't know if you saw this breaking last night. Breaking waves news, Lake Superior, the Lake Superior's Twitter account, officially endorsed Kamala Harris and Tim Walz.
There you go. All right. Let's see. Maria says good morning from Wanakee. And says that she's waiting for her yard signs as well. So, yeah, more people putting up yard signs. Coming up on the program today, Donald Trump stepped on so many rakes during the debate that Eric Hovde started getting jealous. But not to fear, Eric Hovde has a new batch of ads that once again pretend to have regular folks in them. They are not regular folks. We also have Courier Newsroom national correspondent Kia Vakil telling us about how some more political issues are finding their way into courtrooms instead of voting booths. We'll talk to former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel about some legal matters as well. We'll talk to Mark Jacob about how the debate showed that moderators can actually do some fact-checking in real time, even if one of the candidates insists. Never mind the fact checkers. The story about the pets being eaten is true because he heard someone say it on TV. And I love that the late night hosts have been taking that and just running with it. That Trump says he heard it on TV, so it must be true. Sure thing, buddy.
Okay, cool, man. All right, bro.
Yeah, cool story. So Mark Jacob will talk to us about that. And we'll also ask him, whatever happened to the guy that was supposed to mute the microphone at the debate?
Yeah.
Did he just not show up for work that day or what? Let's see. We've got temperatures around the state at 6 a.m. It's going to be another warm one today. 59 here on Lake Wissota, 51 in Hayward, 53 in Park Falls, 57 in Wausau, Green Bay at 58, La Crosse 60, Wisconsin Rapids 60, Oshkosh 63, Madison 59, and it's 55 down by Gregg and Waukesha. This has been this week is what I'd wanted all summer long, a long dry spell, but still warm, but not crazy humid, where I could just drop the top on the Jeep and go for some nice rides. And we went out to dinner last night to an area supper club. And I mean, you just can't beat, you know, driving home from dinner at, you know, the canopy of stars above. The sunsets have been amazing again, because Canada's trying to burn itself down, but hey, the sunsets are still amazing, you know?
Yeah.
So this has been a good week for all that. Is it going to be a good week at the Laughing Tap? Is it going to be a good weekend? What is happening there?
Oh, we got Kate Willett here for two shows, Friday and Saturday, 7:30 apiece. That's going to be great. We're going to have fun. It's $22 online. You can go to laughingtap.com for your tickets. And if you want to pay at the door, it's $25 at the door. No drink minimums. Kick back, have some fun, enjoy a reliable, relaxing, and affordable night of comedy.
And friendly folks.
You know that. You've been there. You've tried the wares.
Yes. This is now a personal testimonial about the nice folks that you find there. So, laughingtap.com. Go look that up. And then you said Sunday is currently a nothing day. Where you will actually get to just like sit and like maybe watch the Packers or something?
I think, you know, Pat, I've really tried to... Like last weekend, I got so much done, but it's one of those things where you did so much, but you really did about an hour, 2 hours of work. That's what I want to do on Sundays. I want to like knock out some projects in the morning and then take the rest of the day.
It's perfect. Because
there's stuff to do. There's always stuff to do around the house. There is a project in my backyard that's been staring at me since we moved in, and I'm just like, argh. Here's a question I have for you as a homeowner. Yes. Because this is so, first of all, real quick, what is the earliest that you would be okay with a neighbor mowing their lawn? And then also, I have to cut down some wood using like a sawzall, so I'll get a little loud. Mm-hmm. Is that just under, like, I'm just afraid they're gonna be like, would you please stop doing that? I'd be like, I gotta do this thing, it's gotta happen, you know what I mean? Like,
yep. For me, the guideline, which I'll give you the exception in a minute, the guideline is 9 o'clock on Saturday, 10 o'clock on Sunday.
Okay.
Just because it's a little peaceful and everything else. I call it a guideline though, because, and every neighbor needs to be able to do this. If you know that, like, it's, you know, rain is imminent, like it's going to be a rainy afternoon or even a rainy late morning, but it hasn't moved in yet. And if people are firing things up at 8 a.m. or maybe a touch earlier, you got to let them. If you know it's going to be rainy, it's like, oh, they're mowing their lawn this early. Well, yeah, you got to,
yeah,
you know, because so there are exceptions. But yeah, 9, 10-ish, I tend to go with that. We don't, we've never had anybody doing anything ungodly early here, thank goodness, unless they're doing construction, you know, because construction crews are notorious for showing up at 6:30, 7 o'clock. But, you know, that's not a bad thing, you know. Okay. So you're going to be an early morning, landscape artist and project doer before you take it easy for the afternoon?
I got a children's play set that came with the house that's just not safe. No child should be on that. But it's made of wood, so what I want to just do is I just want to cut it all to pieces and throw it out. Because it's not even it's not even salvageable wood. It's just, it's beaten down. It's rickety. I
picture like this Addams Family type thing, what they've got for a playground, you know, behind the house. You know, when you say a playset that isn't safe, I'm right away thinking of Dan Aykroyd and the bag of broken glass. Like, hey, this is a great toy for kids. They love the bag of broken glass.
This you can teddy take
it
bear
to Greg's house.
This teddy bear has wood chips and nails in it.
Every kid likes that. Tetanus shot extra.
Yeah.
So, good luck with the project this weekend. Thank Brewers, meanwhile, have a magic number now down to 7. Joe Zepecki was asking yesterday, will the Brewers have clinched by the time we talk next week? And I just blurted out yes, out of confidence. I could not remember what the magic number was. So as soon as I saw today that it had dropped to 7, I'm like, okay, good. I feel like I've covered. I think we can get that done. The Brewers were winners in San Francisco last night, 3-0. Jackson Churio hit a 2-run homer. Frankie Montas pitched 6 scoreless innings for the Brewers in that victory, taking one more step toward winning the National League Central. The Brewers have a 9-game lead over the Cubs after taking 2 of 3 from the Giants. So the magic number is 7 for the division. But more importantly, and it's not life or death, but it is, it matters, if you could get that first round bye. And the way the playoffs are structured now is there's 3 divisions, so there's 3 division winners, but only the top 2 get a first round bye. And the other division winner, the third one, has to play in the wild card round, which is how the Brewers got eliminated last year, you know, swept in a best 2 out of 3. So the Brewers are in that number 3 spot right now. And they are about 3 games behind the Dodgers and I think 3.5 or so behind the Phillies to get one of those first round byes. So nobody should get complacent. Yes, the Brewers are going to clinch the division, but you still want to be chasing the Dodgers and the Phillies for one of those spots. And yes, as Mary puts up on YouTube comment just now, Hank passed away. That was the 2014 season. I don't know if you were plugged into to Hank, Hank, the puppy they adopted during spring training.
Yeah, I remember Hank. Yeah. And
then the thing, well, I mean, so we're talking 10 years here. So that's that was a nice run. And
Hank wasn't a puppy when they got him, too, I think.
No. And but he was just a cute little.
Yeah.
Straggler that they brought on board, so that was nice. So we wish happy trails to Hank. Roger says, good morning from Stevens Point. 5 years ago today, we lost Eddie Money. So always got a little trivia, little music trivia for us all the time, and we appreciate that very much, Roger. The Brewers, meanwhile, head over to Arizona. Their game tonight is at 8:40. Then tomorrow at 7:10, and then Sunday at 3:10, and then starts a 7-game homestand starting Monday with 3 against the Phillies and then 4 against Arizona. We'll unpack some of the news coming up about Eric Hovde and more next. You're up north on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Up at dawn and sleepy and yawning, still the taste of wine. 'Cause I remember you're mine and I got a world that's fine. What's before me, routines that bore me, punch the clock at 8.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Mel Torme. Mel Torme will be part of today's history lesson, as will Ray Charles. Oops, as will Ray Charles and others coming up in about 30 minutes here on Up North News Radio.
Do you know what I love about this clip I'm playing right now? It's from a show that was on, I'm assuming, American television called
Jazz. It was PBS's predecessor, NET, National Educational Television. Yes,
it's so called
it's a PBS thing.
Jazz Casual. It's called Jazz Casual. I love that.
Jazz Casual with Mel Torme there, just, you know, swinging with the little quartet or whatever.
Oh yeah,
yeah. It's very nice.
so cool.
We'll have more of today's history lesson coming up in just a bit. Of course, we have the Up North News daily newsletter that you can sign up for at upnorthnewswi.com. Just click subscribe up in the top banner. Among the stories today, he said, celebrity Packer fans. That's right. In honor of the Packers home opener coming up this Sunday, Christina Lurie writes about some of the more famous Packer fans and what it is that makes them cheeseheads based on some of the stories that they tell. There are also some end of summer getaway ideas if you're looking for a weekend road trip here before things really start to cool off. And an article about the economists that have been weighing in on the plans of Vice President Kamala Harris and former President Donald Trump. and what economists say those plans would do. And I would listen to them because they're experts. Like, yeah, it doesn't mean they're right about everything all the time, but it is at least an informed analysis as opposed to, well, my plan's going to work just because I say so. So for that and more, sign up for our newsletter at upnorthnewswi.com. So again, speaking of the Packers, that home opener is Sunday at noon against the Indianapolis Colts. The Badgers, meanwhile, host the Alabama Crimson Tide 11 o'clock tomorrow morning at Camp Randall. I get, Greg, that Alabama isn't, you know, especially with Nick Saban gone, they're not the be-all and end-all that they, the juggernaut that they were for forever. Now that appears to be Georgia, but still, I mean, Alabama is Alabama, so I am really hoping for a big and exciting upset. But you're playing, what are they, the number five team in the country, something like that? Mm. So, you know, I'm just going to try to enjoy the game.
That's what you should always do when you watch sports.
Yes, yeah, not to get too worked up of, oh, this team is killing us. Like, well, they're fifth ranked in the nation. Yeah, that's going to happen.
Also, cool it on the us talk. You ain't playing.
Yes, thank you. Yes, very true. Nice to be reminded about that. All right, so do you remember, we're talking about Eric Hovde here, yeah. Was it 6 weeks ago or so, and he was running a commercial in a bar, three regular guys are in a bar, and they're complaining about Tammy Baldwin and the economy, and then, you know, Hovde comes up with a tray of beers to make them happy. Oh, and they weren't regular guys. They were on his payroll. They were part of his company.
Yeah.
You know, because God forbid you actually get some, you know, some mooks to actually, you know, come in and speak on your behalf. Well, let me tell you about the new batch of ads that Eric Hovde has put together. This story was first reported by our friends at Heartland Signal, WCPT Radio out of Chicago. And in these ads, there's a series of folks talking about the economic struggles of everyday Wisconsinites. There's one, all you see on the screen with her is Kathy. So her name is Kathy. And she talks about grocery bills and car payments. And then Eric Hovde posts about it and says, I hear stories like Kathy's far too often. Wisconsinites are struggling to get by because of Biden, Harris, and Baldwin. And let's see, then there's another one where the woman is identified as Nancy. And Nancy is endorsing Hovde's plan to lower costs and protect our health care. And you can't see my finger quotes, but I hope my voice made clear that we don't know the plan from Eric Hovde. He just says he's going to lower costs and protect our care. And Hovde put up that on Twitter and said, Nancy is ready to retire Tammy Baldwin and get our country back on track. And then there's a third ad with a dude. We don't even see a name on him, but he's talking, and Eric Hovde posted about that on Twitter. And just links to the ad with the guy and says that Kamala Harris and Tammy Baldwin's horrible economic policies are leaving the next generation worse off, because the guy is a younger guy. The guy actually does have a name. It's Samuel. Samuel Krieg, I believe it is. And he's not a regular guy. He's a Republican candidate for state assembly in that area. You'd think you'd label the candidate, or maybe not put an assembly candidate in as a quote-unquote regular guy. There was Nancy. Nancy is a board member of the Waukesha County Republican Party, but that is not disclosed in the ad. And our first commercial with Kathy. Kathy is the executive director of the Waukesha County Republican Party. And again, not disclosed in an ad. Now, these ones aren't on the Hovde payroll per se. Are they regular folks? Yeah. They're also members of the party, and we don't see that anywhere in the ad, because we're led to believe that Eric Hovde could pluck any three random people off the street, and they would all say what a wonderful guy he is and what a wonderful plan he has. And that's just not the case, Eric. That's not That's not how these regular guy things are supposed to work.
You remember Tammy Baldwin's ad like a month or two ago with the farming couple, and they were very, you know, very open and very, the language was not censored. Those are real. It's not hard to find regular people. It's, or, you know, with the bar thing, hire three actors. It's a, that's a thing that takes some acting. So yeah, that's fine. Hire three. No one would have a problem if you hired three actors, but they just continually just don't do that thing. They don't reach out and say, hey, is anybody here struggling? Anyone here voting for me? Would you like to be in a commercial? That's not difficult to do.
No. And you know, we, I recalled in my campaigns where, again, we had, you got the production company and you'd have people who were like maybe extras, but to have them sit and give a speaking role like that, that's the difference. I mean, I've had one where, you know, a guy rode a motorcycle in one of my ads. And yeah, it was a guy working on our campaign. He had no speaking role. He wasn't presenting himself as anything other than a guy riding a motorcycle. But when you're sitting down and saying, life is hard and Eric Hovde's got a plan, get the regular folks like Tammy Baldwin did. It's, you know, again, not terribly difficult.
You could even have that guy in the motorcycle say, hey, I support Pratt Kreitlow so much, I volunteer with the campaign and so can you. Because, you know, you can... Yeah. Be open and honest and get people interested. But this is just, he sucks at this. His team sucks at this. His spokesman left the campaign. He sucks at this.
he's not good.
No.
He's not good. I'll tell you that much. And again, like his buddy Ron Johnson, just feels like enough money with enough ads might drag him across the finish line, but that does not appear to be the case so far, at least based on, you know, this week's Marquette poll. Let's pause here. When we come back, Courier Newsroom national correspondent Kia Vakil will talk a bit about the debate. Friday morning rolls on here on Up North News Radio. Courier Newsroom national correspondent Kia Vakil joining me now. Kia, how are you?
I am well, Pat. How about yourself?
Good. Doesn't the convention and being at that rooftop where we recorded, doesn't that feel like 6 months ago at this point already?
It does. A lot has happened since then. I've had COVID. We've had a presidential debate. God, who knows what else.
And well, we're going to get to a lot of it because so much of what involves the election has been going through courts of one kind or another. And I'm, you know, Wisconsin probably won't be an exception by the time this is all said and done. I mean, the Wisconsin Supreme Court this week said that they would have, at some point, take up the case of whether the legislature has the authority to fire the Elections Commission administrator. Spoiler alert, they don't. But the, you know, that court case will still go on. So we'll get to all of those. Obviously, the big thing this week was the debate and the continued after effects of it. And whether, and I'm asking you this, tongue planted so firmly into cheek it hurts, whether Donald Trump has made some kind of a pivot or actually just made any adjustment whatsoever. And Kia, I'm not calling him a robot. I don't see how that's ever going to happen.
No, it's never going to happen. He is an out of control 4-year-old in a 78-year-old body. So no, he's never going to pivot. And any these store, he's never going to become quote unquote the day he became president. Like, it's just not going to happen. The man's a lunatic. And, you know, we saw in the debate, Kamala Harris clearly went into it with a strategy of just baiting him relentlessly, and he fell for it every single time. And, you know, that's not someone that I want in the White House. If he can be baited that easily in 90 minutes that many times, what's he going to do when he's the most powerful person in the world, when other country's leaders or his own party's leaders or other individuals try to, you know, win curry favor with him?
I think it's just, that's what Vladimir Putin's been doing for years, is just dangling one compliment after another, probably one small favor here and there. And I think folks are no longer seeing in him somebody who would necessarily work on their behalf. Now, Vice President Harris and Governor Walz and all kinds of surrogates are traveling all over the country throughout the course of this week.
And they too have seemed, again, they don't really feel the need to change much of anything. They've consistently kept to what appears to be an economic message, which strikes me as very smart, because if Trump were smart, he'd be hitting on inflation and the economy all the time, but they're just like passing references before he gets back to, you know, racist tropes about, you know, immigrants, you know, eating dogs. So if Harris and Walz get to talk about the economy first, they're gonna win that battle of ideas.
Yeah, I mean, if you're Harris and Walz, you know, the two things I think you got to do are just relentlessly talk about the economic plans, probably propose a couple more, frankly, and then talk about abortion and do those two things, do them aggressively, do more interviews. So a lot of voters still are trying to learn about Kamala Harris because she's only been the candidate for like 6 weeks. And so, you know, that's what she has to do now. And, you know, if they do that for the next 2 months, roughly, like, I feel as if they're in decent shape. You know, Trump, again, has the message discipline of a rodent, and he is going to, all he did on Tuesday was talk about the border, the border, the border, immigrants, 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 eating cats and dogs, which is, you know, BS. Mm-hmm. That is not happening. It's just another way in which he's demonizing immigrants and with real life consequences. On Thursday, we saw City Hall in Springfield get a bomb threat, Springfield, Ohio, which is where this, you know, nonsense about Haitian immigrants, you know, eating household pets. That's the conspiracy theory. It's not true. Anyone with a brain and eyes and ears and a functioning sense of, you know, logic knows it's not true. It's just race baiting hate. And, you know, it's going to have consequences. We've seen this over and over again through the years that when you demonize a population, you pave the path for them to be, you know, the state to go after them. We saw it obviously in Nazi Germany. We've seen it in the US during World War II with Japanese internment camps. We've seen it during Trump's first term with child separation. And, you know, he's clearly setting the stage again to try to deport as many people who are not white as possible.
And it's not going to change. I mean, this is the centerpiece of the race. And if anybody thinks that you know, J.D. Vance is suddenly going to sound contrite about this kind of thing, you are definitely fooling yourself. Now, pivoting then to abortion rights. And again, one of the... I guess I'll keep using the word surprise, although it's becoming less so. One of the surprises since the Dobbs decision has been how in red state after red state after red state, voters have come together and said, well, this isn't a Democratic or a Republican issue. This is about personal freedoms. And so there's news to report from North Dakota, from Missouri, from Florida. Do you want to talk about the Florida effort to codify abortion rights?
Yeah, so Florida has a 6-week abortion ban in place signed by Ron DeSantis, you know, last seen being humiliated by Donald Trump for a year. But, you know, he still runs the state of Florida and they have a 6-week ban in place. And there was a citizen-led ballot measure that got placed on the ballot for November that would effectively give voters the chance, if 60% of voters vote yes, would essentially restore the Roe standard, restoring abortion rights till around 24 weeks in the state. The state Supreme Court signed off on this measure, despite efforts by DeSantis and the Secretary of State to sabotage it. So voters will get a chance to vote. But ever since, you know, it was approved and made official, the Republicans have tried one thing after another to attack it. They released a really misleading and political financial impact statement that's going to appear alongside the ballot measure, essentially saying if voters approved it, the state would lose a bunch of money and get sued a lot. Not true. They also put up a government-run, taxpayer-funded website attacking it, which, you know, is not exactly appropriate. And there's a lawsuit over that now. And DeSantis has also sicked his election police, sending them to the doors of voters who signed the petition to get it on the ballot. You know, if that's not an abuse of state power, I don't really know what is. This is, again, it's just another way that party has gone fully authoritarian, despite a chunk of their voters, a non-zero chunk, almost half, I would say, supporting abortion rights. It's going to need 60% to pass of the vote in Florida. That means a solid third of Republicans are going to have to vote for it. In other states, in Missouri, we saw the Republican Secretary of State do everything he could to try to sabotage a similar citizen-led ballot measure. And the state Supreme Court, which is controlled by Republicans. Missouri is a ruby red state. They told him, no, you got to do your job and place it on the measure. They followed all the laws. In North Dakota, we saw a judge on Thursday throw out that state's abortion ban. That ultimately will likely go to that state Supreme Court, which may rule differently. But there are ballot measures all across the country in red, blue, and purple states. And, you know, in some of these states, in Arkansas, we saw the state Republicans there essentially block it. We're seeing similar challenges in other states like Nebraska, because they know they can't win on the merits. They know their own voters largely, you know, or plurality of them support abortion rights. And so rather than have a good faith conversation or play, you know, play it straight up and just try to win, they're just trying to rig the game instead.
And in North Dakota, you know, the Republican controlled legislature had put basically a 6-week ban in place. But again, even in this ruby red state, you have a good chunk of the people there who don't see this as any kind of a partisan issue. And so that's why you're seeing these things in the courts and will continue to see them in the courts. Now, there's another topic that's been in the courts, and that is about school vouchers. A big issue in many parts of Wisconsin. There is a legal challenge that is slowly grinding its way through the courts now. But in both of the Carolinas, there has been some movement. They're both Republican states by and large, but the movement has been in opposite directions.
Yeah, so in North Carolina, we saw Republicans in the state legislature, where they have a supermajority, pass a $463 million expansion of their private school voucher program, which effectively means, you know, taxpayer dollars are going to go to the families of wealthier kids who already go to private schools or who want to go to private schools on, you know, and have the taxpayers pay for it. Over 10 years, they're going to fund an extra $5 billion, essentially taking that money from public schools that are already underfunded in North Carolina and giving it to the parents of private school kids. And something we've seen is that private schools don't just take that money and, you know, say thank you. They raise their tuition to be able to gobble up as much money as possible from parents on top of that voucher. We've seen this absolutely decimate state government funding budgets in places like Arizona. We know vouchers, schools, private schools don't have to accept kids with disabilities or learning issues. You know, they largely exist in wealthy suburbs and cities and not in rural areas. So this is just going to create more inequality between the haves and have nots in places like North Carolina. And that's a shame. Neighboring state, South Carolina, that state Supreme Court just ruled in the opposite direction that you cannot use taxpayer funded dollars for private schools. That makes a lot of sense to me, you know, but that is going against the grain of what's happening right now in these red states.
Well, and it's because the Republicans in South Carolina thought they had found this workaround, that if they just put that money in a trust fund, an education scholarship trust fund, quote unquote, well, now it's no longer the state funding vouchers. The Supreme Court there, in so many words, said, get out of here. I mean, yeah. You know, and really, it takes a certain amount of arrogance to think, well, we're conservative legislators, and those are conservative justices, and so they're just going to go along with us because politically we have the same values. There is still some honor among some of the folks in justices' robes out there.
Yeah, that is true. And, you know, unfortunately, that argument, that backdoor way, does work in some states.
Yes.
I believe it's Pennsylvania. I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure it's Pennsylvania, where if you are a wealthy person and you donate to these, I think it's called opportunity scholarships, empowerment scholarships, they have all these, you know, fake terms. Mm-hmm. You essentially get the same amount back as a tax write-off. And so it's just like this backdoor method to funnel public school dollars towards private schools. And the goal is not to ensure people have a quality education, it's to decimate public schools. It has been a century-long goal of the right because they want to be able to, you know, have greater control. They want funding of religious schools. They want more leeway and less regulation of homeschools, which, you know, would effectively put a lot of kids in vulnerable positions. So, you know, it's not something we should take them at their word for, because there's a mountain of evidence that these things are damaging for schools and families and communities, and very little evidence that they actually help anyone learn more.
So let's close on an upbeat note. That, of course, would be Taylor Swift and her endorsement post-debate of the Harris-Walz ticket and how she suggested in Instagram, she gave a link to vote.gov, which is run by the General Services Administration and the Election Assistance Commission. And last number I saw through the New York Times was that the number is now up to 406,000 people clicked on that link in the 24 hours after Taylor Swift posted it. Never underestimate the power of any of us to try to get other people to remember to register and vote. Taylor just does it on a little bigger level.
Yeah, I mean, she has a pretty big following. I believe it's almost the size of this country on Instagram. Mm-hmm. Obviously, a lot of those people are abroad. But, you know, it was a very anodyne endorsement. And yet you saw the entire right-wing media apparatus lose its mind. You saw a lot of people harassing people who had the gall to like that post. You know, Caitlin Clark, who's a basketball phenomenon mm-hmm. in the WNBA from the Midwest in Indiana, from Iowa originally. She's getting all sorts of harassment in her Instagram comments now because she happened to like the post and then say people should always encourage people to vote. Yeah. And that's just a sign of where we are, where, you know, a large majority of folks, at least on the online right, are just, you know, absolutely lose their minds if someone has a different ideology.
Oh, it's not online. We talked yesterday about Congressman Derek Van Orden and other Republicans blowing up in a committee hearing this week yep. that, you know, the Department of Veterans Affairs would have the audacity to try to work toward encouraging and making it easier for veterans to register and vote, not telling them how to vote, to register to vote. Quick final stat here, according to people for the website, on Monday, the age group with the most visitors to vote411.org was in the 55 to 65-year-old range. From Wednesday onward, the number one group was 18 to 24. Y'all are getting it done, kids. You're getting it done. Appreciate it so much. We appreciate you, Kia Vakil.
Coming home, baby, now. I'm coming home now, right away. I'm coming home, baby, now.
You find me any other station in town that's going to give you a double dose of Mel Torme during the 6 a.m. hour.
Even if it's unintentional.
Mel Torme, born 99 years ago today, passed away in 1999. I have to admit, I didn't know him as much of the crooner that he was first known for. I really first got to know him through the original Night Court. There you go. With, you know, he was Judge Stone Harry Anderson. That was like his hero. Yeah. And when Mel Torme started finally making cameos, that was awesome.
Yeah.
But I will say that one of my first radio jobs was at a station that played, you know, some big band and some standards hits and things. So I've got, again, feel like kind of that last generation that's got a little bit of exposure to things that, you know, my kids now would be like, Mel who? What? You know, what is this? But come on, Mel Torme, swing, baby, swing. Also in today's history lesson, let's see, a big birthday today for Peter Cetera. One time from Chicago, then had his own solo career. Peter Cetera is 80 years old today.
Oh, yeah.
Love those horns.
You are my love and my life.
On this day in 1948, Margaret Chase Smith is elected United States Senator, becoming the first woman to serve in both the U.S. House of Representatives and the United States Senate. Singer Fiona Apple is 47 years old today. Just a very unique, breathy, earthy voice on her.
Oh, yeah. I'm not Fiona a huge Apple. Beatles covers fan.
Yeah. Just,
they never really, but this one hits. This one,
yes,
this
it
one
does.
Hits.
That's why I picked it. I'm like, yep, this is one of the few Beatles covers that I would definitely play frequently. Niall Horan from One Direction is 31 years old today. So Taylor Swift was once again honored at the MTV Video Music Awards the other night. And this is the anniversary of the day in 2009 when she won Best Female Video. And Kanye West came up on stage and commandeered the microphone and said Beyonce deserved the award for her Single Ladies video. When Beyonce does win for Video of the Year later that night, she brings Taylor Swift back on stage to finish her speech. And the dynamic between those three has always been awkward, to put it mildly. That I won't call it love-hate. It's certainly not that. And it's not just outright feud, but it's just weird. And it all started there with Kanye, who to this day, you know, he and Jay-Z and others say that Beyonce still hasn't received her proper due. Beyonce, did you see she was completely snubbed by the CMAs?
You know, honestly, that doesn't surprise me. Was it the CMAs or the ACMs? But either way, I didn't expect it to happen. They don't like outsiders. I mean, they erased the chicks. They erased them. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I'm sure there's a deeper conversation about it that people want to talk about. But the fact is that this does not surprise me at all.
No, it doesn't. On this day in 1975, a song about dealing with the unrealistic standards of beauty, not the stuff you typically hear on the radio. Janis Ian's At 17 peaked at number 3 this day in 1975.
I learned the truth at 17, that love was meant for beauty.
All right, I've been saving one of the birthdays till last because it's going to guide very nicely into how we finish up the segment today. Ray Charles was born this day in 1918, passed away in 2015. Here's one of his more famous songs.
She's still playing. Oh. Hold on. Here we go. There we go.
Oh, beautiful.
Never going to get tired of hearing Ray Charles doing America the Beautiful, born this day in 1918. Finally, in a turning point in the War of 1812, the British failed to capture Baltimore. And during the battle, Francis Scott Key composed a poem. It was called The Defense of Fort McHenry. It was set to music. It would later become the national anthem of the United States. It was not the easiest thing to sing. It never has been the easiest song to sing. Some folks have figured out how to make little tweaks to it and make it their own, as Whitney Houston did at the Super Bowl one year. And that'll take us to our news break, and then we'll have much more in the second hour of Up North News Radio on the Civic Media Radio Network.